Welcome to Talking Up Music Education, a podcast from the NAMM Foundation. Talking Up Music Education podcast shares news and stories about music education from teachers, students, parents, school, and community leaders who care about music education and are working to create more opportunities for music learning. And now, here's your host, Mary Lurson.
Hello, everyone. This is Mary Lurson from the NAMM Foundation, and thank you so much for joining me for this episode of Talking Up Music Education, the podcast that comes to you from the NAMM Foundation that celebrates music making, music education for people of all ages and abilities. I'm so thrilled to have with me a esteemed colleague from many years and many various journeys, Eric Booth. First of all, Eric, tell us where you are today and what you do.
Hi, lovely to be with you. And I am blessedly at home today, which is in the Hudson River Valley. I find myself on the road over half the days of the year. So a day at home, even in the snow, is pretty beautiful.
That's great. So what takes you away from home so much? What do you do, Eric?
I wish I had a handy way to describe it. I never had a normal job, and I want to make sure your listeners know I am completely not a musician. My own background is in the theater, but I found my way into the music world when I was hired to start the teaching artist program at Juilliard. So I was thrust into the heart of the classical music world and have really spent most of the rest of recent 30 years working with music organizations, 7 of the 10 largest symphony orchestras in the U.S., lots of arts learning organizations, helping them make stronger connections to schools, helping them make stronger partnerships with the communities that surround them. And in recent years, I've been particularly enthusiastic about working with El Sistema-inspired programs. Programs that are dedicated to intensive music learning for young people who haven't had the same opportunities for music learning as others. And so in recent years, to see these programs take root now in 66 countries around the world, it's been an extraordinary expansion of my own understanding of how potent music learning is to address real social challenges in kids' lives, not just the joy and beauty of making music, but the sheer muscle power of music to make a difference in young lives.
That's a wonderfully put, Eric. For our audience, I want to just be sure to state how Eric has been really at the forefront well before many organizations thought about the community arts organization connections. You were really out sort of building and defining them, kind of going back to the very early times. The fact that Juilliard wanted to have some capacity building for these artists, you know, these Olympic level musician artists in training to actually connect more deeply to community. How did that come to you as being something that should happen or be part of what the work was, Eric? How did that start for you?
Well, I'd say for my own part of how it started is a little different than how it started for the field. I was a Broadway actor having the kind of career that everybody in the theater wants to have, and I didn't like it. I didn't like doing 8 shows a week. I didn't like all the commercials and soap operas. It wasn't the reason I got into the theater as an art form. So I began experimenting around the side. And my very first day working in what's called teaching artistry, it wasn't a real thing even at that time, was so immediately satisfying. I started pursuing what I found so much more invigorating about activating the artistry of young people and being involved in the learning process rather than just cranking out 8 shows a week, that I began to pursue it with every fiber of my being. And then along the way, institutions began to recognize the opportunity of having artists learn education skills to expand beyond just being great performers. And this has grown steadily over the 40 years that I've been doing this work. Juilliard was certainly a marker when, you know, the great Vatican of classical arts decides they want to train teaching artists. And now the field has grown so much. They say there's 30,000 teaching artists in the US, and I was able to start the International Teaching Artist Collaborative, where we have international conferences of artists who work in communities and schools around the world. And now we are building the first world network of artists for social change. So I got out lucky in the early days and was good enough and passionate enough to grow up with the field and be able to contribute to its growth.
Yeah, I would say led the initiative, a thought leader. So I want to personally acknowledge that, Eric. You've always been in the forefront of this conversation. Where can people find more about the international organization that you mentioned? Does it have a web base?
Sure does. They can head right for a website, ITAC, I-T-A-C, will take them there, International Teaching Artist Conference or International Teaching Artist Collaborative. And we're just getting rolling. We've got enough money now to have full-time staff and great things ahead. So that's pretty exciting. And I also want to go back a little bit to that mention of the El Sistema programs, because that's been my other great passion of the last 12 or 13 years. I got into it when I took a sabbatical from work, which is a kind of fancy term for a freelancer, an expensive term for a freelancer, when I wanted to pause and just rethink how to dedicate the last chapter of my work life, or let's just say the 50 plus years of my life. And in those 2 years of reassessing where to put that energies for the last chapter, I had a bunch of amazing adventures working in rural Tanzania, and then going to Venezuela and seeing El Sistema, which was the single most astonishing accomplishment in music learning I'd ever seen. And right on that very first trip, 12, 13 years ago, I determined that a significant proportion of the rest of my life would be bringing that kind of powerful learning to young people in the US and in other countries around the world, and indeed to see it over those 12 or 13 years grow from an amazing phenomenon in Venezuela and some other Latin American countries into being 66 countries around the world, most recently New Guinea, programs that take kids deep into music making to address the most serious challenges in their lives. And I want to mention that my partner and I wrote a book about this called Playing for Their Lives. And we were able to travel to 25 countries to see what does this work look like in Afghanistan and in Palestine and in a Maori community of northern New Zealand and in cities like Tokyo. And Fukushima, indeed, where the terrible tsunami tragedy happened, in slums of Kenya. So the idea was to discover how does the power of music making express itself in different cultures, in different musics, but coming from the same place that all of your listeners know, that when you open your heart to complete commitment to music making, it creates a new trajectory for your life. And to see the power of that trajectory, taking kids out of poverty, taking 100% of those high school kids into graduating from high school and into college, extraordinary results.
It's a wonderful book, Playing for Their Lives. And is that book available on Amazon or the normal?
It was published by Norton, so it's bookstores and should be pretty easy to get anywhere.
It's just an amazing book if one is seeking some inspiration for the life's work of supporting and being engaged with music making and music education. And I think you tell just a remarkable story from these 25 countries.
Thank you. And it was just the privilege of a lifetime to go into, you know, a gang-ridden ghetto in a small town in Brazil and be welcomed by the same community that's gathering around your podcast, the same understandings, the same passion, and everywhere the same joy, even under such difficult circumstances. It just felt like a ridiculously great privilege to be able to participate.
Yeah, I know the videos that I've seen of folks that have visited the El Sistema programs in the really struggling countries and communities. You know, they walk through, you know, really just phenomenally subhuman kind of environments. And then as they get closer to a location, they start hearing Mozart chamber music.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's there's a wonderful saying, or I guess with an economic development, there's always been this sort of tension. Well, they have to have clean water and adequate housing, and then they'll go and create fine art or the art of their culture, as opposed to, no, they already have the capacity to create the art in their culture. And from that, they change and transform the water system and the housing. And I think that's what the El Sistema movement has shown, is showing the world.
Exactly.
Right.
You know, one of the things that at first I was challenged to admit this, but I've come to really recognize it, that Maslow's hierarchy of needs, that people, your listeners probably know, that pyramid that shows you got to take care of the survival basics of life before you're able to move up towards self-realization and creativity. In many of these tough neighborhoods with Sistema programs, I actually saw that pyramid inverted, where kids were self-realizing through the beauty of their music making and relying on one another as peers. And just as you were saying, taking that fullness of heart and spirit back to their family and making the family more functional, actually starting to make the family be able to help the family become more functional in terms of taking care of basic needs, actually seeing issues of safety and food sufficiency developed as a result of the kind of wholeness that emerges around that program. So again and again, I was seeing this astonishing inversion of what I had thought was a required ladder of change. Music was inverting it and making new things possible.
Yeah, again, so beautifully put, Eric. So let's talk about something that you brought to our attention that we hope to do together that addresses some of the heartbreaking realities of the life at the border, at the U.S.-Mexican border. You brought to us the opportunity for us to be involved in a small school district right at the border. Tell us about this community and how you've come to know about it.
Sure. And I'll give you just a little bit of background first, that on some of my travels, I spent some time in El Sistema Greece, which dedicates itself to migrant crisis in Europe, which we all see on the television. These, you know, very difficult camps that people who've gone through the miserable travel to get to safety are end up in these camps in Europe, and in this case, Athens. And they started an El Sistema program in one of them that had such powerful transformative effect, not only on the young people involved, but the whole camp itself, that it had lodged in my back of my brain that even in this most dire social stress, music is a powerful answer. And so as I was watching on the news with progressive horror at the difficulties faced by people challenged with the immigration issues on our southern border, I began to feel, man, the answer that they're finding in Greece, that belongs in our country. We have to be able to find some kind of remedy for the horrors these kids are going through. So I spent about 9 months trying to work with U.S. government agencies that, I must say, pretty much brushed me aside, and working with earnest but overwhelmed philanthropic organizations across the southern border, working with international organizations like the International Rescue Committee and the UNHRC, and they're not really being able to manage it. And then through connections and good fortune, we stumbled across, gosh, it so often happens like this, one heroic individual the school superintendent in Tornillo, Texas, the town that some of your listeners may remember as being the home of the largest internment camp in the United States since the Japanese were interned in the Second World War. That's the town. And even though that camp was disbanded through public outrage earlier this year, the town itself is just in a kind of tension around immigration issues with illegal and legal inhabitants, many kids crossing across the border every single day to go to school. This school superintendent said, there has never been any arts in any of our schools in Tornillo, a seriously poor community, and we are going to bring music in to make a difference to these kids. And so she reached out through connections. We are starting an El Sistema program in that school in Tornillo. We'll start with a pilot program starting in January. And thanks to the support of the NAM Foundation, we're actually are going to be able to support in start in January. The pieces are coming together. And so it is the kind of disparate good intent is being channeled through this one individual, Ms. Vega, the superintendent of that school district, who had the vision and is now drawing together the resources to make an intensive music education program for those kids who are living in that immigration crisis.
Yeah, that was so moving to us when you brought us the story, and it actually was a deliberation of our board just last month in November. And collectively, the board said, we will do this. And it's something kind of off cycle, off budget, you know, but it's the board is going to lead the way. And I would invite any of our listeners, if they're compelled by this idea, simply to go to the namfoundation.org website. We've called the project Music Education at the Border. And we're using our Believe in Music Fund donations to help support the program. Of course, all good projects need more than 1 year to mobilize, and we hope that we can support the district in mobilizing the music education opportunity for its 1,000 students. It's just so important. You know, all of us sort of were watching the immigration and border enforcement activities take place. And this is gives us a chance to do something together collectively. So we hope we can go there together, Eric. It's something I very much want to do. And our board wants to go as well.
Looking forward to that. And let me just say that idea of music education at the border, that's a big idea. In my 9 months of trying to get a program started, I encountered so many people who had good intent. They actually wanted to bring music to the kids who were under such stress all across that southern border, but they needed an example. They needed to kind of know what it would look like before they could have the courage to really put together a program. So the NAM Foundation's kind of courageous step in supporting this first program, I think, may inspire quite a few other programs to say, wow, look at what that is doing for those kids who need it. That can happen in Phoenix, and that can happen across New Mexico and California. So I think we're going to see a domino effect once we get this program up and running. And the community itself is kind of giddy with excitement when they've heard that people outside of Tornillo are interested in what they're going to be doing, and they're looking at instruments and thinking they're going to get to play them. It has the same feel that I found when I would be in a tough neighborhood in Rio or in Colombia, that same feel of giddy excitement from kids who are going to have music come into their lives.
And I think, Eric, you and I have finally found the really perfect project for us to work on together. I feel so grateful for that. So
me too. You. Can't wait.
Yeah. So it's been my great pleasure to have with us today Eric Booth, arts education trainer, empresario of arts education, global ambassador for music making in El Sistema. I could go on and on, but most of all, a very, very inspiring friend. Thank you, Eric, so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Mary. Lovely to talk with you.
And thanks to all of you for listening to Talking at Music Education, a podcast of the NAM Foundation.
Talking Talking Up Music Education is a podcast created by the NAMM Foundation. To learn more about how you can support music education in your community or how you can be part of the work of the NAMM Foundation, visit our website, www.namfoundation.org, or join us on Facebook at facebook.com/NAMM Foundation. You can also follow Mary on Twitter at Mary L. NAMM. That's Mary L. N-A-M-M.